And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the handful in attendance and the millions listening on the web on skidrow.la, this is Mad Time Radio.
Play. Why don't you go ahead and just sound the voice for us?
Oh, dude, you want me to do the
intro?
Oh,
dude, we got air conditioner rolling up in here.
Oh, you're killing me, Smalls.
Hey, Skid Row Studios, Mad Time Radio, we're back. I'd like to welcome everybody. We got a full house. We got star-studded guests in here, air conditioner, everything's blowing up. So let me go around the table real quick, and then I'll let you know who we have in the studio here. We also got my boy Hector's in the house. Hey, what's up, Hector?
How's it going, man? Your resident boxing guy's back here again.
Okay, anything else?
Huh? No. Let's go around.
We got my boy Jaime's in the house.
Hey, ¿qué pasa, raza?
We got my boy Noah Tillis in the house. TillisBJJ.com. Go get some free jiu-jitsu over there from this guy. This guy's black belt.
Hey, how you doing?
That's it, Noah?
That's it, dude.
All right, man. Let's get to the man of the hour, man. We got boxing trainer extraordinaire, cut man extraordinaire.
You've seen him on the UFC.
Where else have we seen him?
You'll see him on HBO carrying that Bluetooth on his ear all the time, dude. Call him, dude.
Making some phone calls out there. We got Rudy Hernandez in the building.
How you guys doing today? Thank you for the invite. And I think I've been on Channel 34 as well.
Oh, dude.
Oh, right on, dude. So see, now you're moving up, dude.
Man.
I thought so.
You went from Univision to Skid Row Studios, dude. Always good, always good.
One hood to the other.
We're getting there.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for coming down. I know you got stuff to do on Sunday, and I appreciate you. I know you had a busy day yesterday. So.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
It's a real pleasure to be here.
All right, man. Thank you, man. I just thought maybe we got, 50 minutes or so. I just thought maybe we can run down. You can tell us. Maybe some people don't know who you are because we got some people who aren't boxing fans and
haters.
Yeah. So I thought maybe you can just give us a little background on where you're from, where you grew up, and then how you got started, and we'll just dabble into whatever else comes our way.
Born and raised in South Central LA, and started boxing when I was 11 years old. You know, had 17 pro fights, 15 wins, 2 losses. Won a first tournament at the Forum. Decided that it wasn't for me. Started training fighters. Became a coach, a manager, cut man. Pretty much have done it all except we're promoting, but I don't think I'd ever get there.
Talk to me. We'll work.
Too big of a headache. Don't need it. Don't want it.
Rub promoting?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's something I just have no interest in doing.
Hector loves that stuff. He likes headaches.
Come on, dude.
Yeah. So, been working with the UFC for almost 7 years now. So, great job. Love it.
Tell us a little bit about the UFC. I mean, when you became involved in the UFC, it was right when the sport began to evolve. Like, say, now we're going, the early UFCs were spectacle. When you started getting involved with the UFC, it seemed to me it was...
I got music in my background.
It was at the time when, the UFC was starting to legitimize itself as a sport. You know,
now
it was becoming legitimate sport. Tell us about at least your experiences working in with the UFC. What hurdles they had to face on that move to becoming a legitimate sport?
You know, when I first got there, I mean, my brother was already working there. He was a commentator, a Spanish commentator for the UFC. He had been there just a little bit over a year. And he told me that, you know, working as a cut man I was going to have a lot of work. And, you know, that pretty much every fight, you know, somebody would get busted up and, you know, there was going to be plenty of work. And at first it was. But again, I didn't go into the octagon until about 6 months later. It wasn't my cup of tea. I had never even seen a cage fight. And again, you know, it's not my cup of tea. But 6 months later, I'm sitting over there at ringside by the octagon, getting ready to put in some work. And little by little, man, it draws you in. And I learned that. And I tell boxing fans as well that you have to see it for what it is and not compare it to boxing, because it ain't boxing. It's MMA. And when you start to separate the both and get a better understanding of what they are, what MMA is, good chances is you're going to love the sport as well, because it brings a lot of excitement. You just can't go wrong. There's not a show that I've been to where I've left saying, you know, I think it was a waste of time today, or it just wasn't worth watching. But you always get like a couple of good fights, and it makes it well worth it, you know. And in boxing, on the other hand, you know, how many times do you not, you know, expect these fights, you know, to bring out the best of each other, or you know, to drag more people in, but yet it doesn't happen.
Yeah, we could talk about last night a little later.
why do you think that is, though? I mean, what seems to happen? You know, because obviously boxing at some point was the biggest sport around, and it had this allure of like these guys are going out there to battle. I mean, you see it in MMA too, you know, in its defense, because you see some guys are just, you know, they'll stall or hold, but.
Well, they stall and hold for a reason.
Yeah.
They're in the process of doing something, you know. In boxing, it's changed, you know, in the last few years, it's completely changed, you know, to the point where, like, you know, it's, you kind of wonder what kind of fighters are being built today, or not just the fighters, but as human beings, you know. Things have changed, you know. Today, it's like you get a timeout, you know. Years ago, man, we get a spanking. Then you get a timeout. And you know, these kids don't have character anymore. They just don't have that drive. And on the other hand, MMA, these guys are hungry for fame. They want to be the best. They want to go out there and fight. And they got something to fight for, because whoever gets fight of the night gets a big bonus. And some guys don't make a whole lot of money. But when you get that big old bonus, man, that's a big chunk that everybody would want to have, you know. And that's why I'm not saying that that's the only reason that they fight hard. I'm saying that, you know, it's a incentive. But again, these MMA fighters fight today like old fighters used to. They want to succeed. They want to be the best. And today, fighters, meaning boxers, you know, a lot of them are pre-Madonnas. It's like, this is owed to them. Everything seems to be owed to them. It's like, they don't work too hard to have what they got. And I think it's a big mistake. And it hurts the sport.
Would you think some of that would be attributed, at least how the pay scale is set up? I mean, with MMA, we know, I mean, UFC is where you want to be. That's the promotion you want to be fighting under. With boxing, it's pretty much a bunch of people battling for it. So they're trying to like scoop up fighters as early as they can as much money as they can. Do you think fighters take that in boxing? Do they go into this mentality of taking everything for granted, as opposed to MMA guys who know they have to work for, say, fight of the night, KO of the night, if they want to get a nice chunk of change to go with their purse?
You know, it has to do more with personality than anything else.
Really?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you, I mean, my understanding is you were wrestling before. You wrestled before, and it's like, you know, when you did, you know, you did it because it was something that, you know, it was just something that fulfilled you.
Yeah.
And you went out there, man, and you gave it 110%. And that's what I know about wrestlers. As opposed to boxers, I mean, they may be the most talented guys, but at the end of the day, you know, they don't work hard for it. They don't, you know, everything is pretty much like handed over to them because of their skills. Not because they got, because they work for it, but because they got the skills. And you know how this goes. Guys that have this, there's only a few fighters that have the skills and put in the work. And those are the ones that succeed and become, you know, the big time fighters. And those are the guys that make the millions and millions of dollars, you know. But they've earned it because they put in the work. You look at Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, Oscar De La Hoya, all these guys, man, they had the skills, but they also put in the work. Today, if I ask you, who's the next up-and-coming star in boxing?
Manny's the guy who carries the sport right now.
And Floyd, you know.
To an extent, yeah, Floyd.
And then who, you know?
But do you think that's a lot attributed to now, it seems like, what reality shows? You got all these people, like, they even have one for boxing where, what's the name of that guy?
24/7.
No, was like his name was Sergio something, who was like the...
Sergio Mora, yeah, the contender.
Yeah, the contender. They have shows like that. Do you think that, like, promotes people to not work hard to be the best?
No, because that was only one show.
Yeah.
It was just like one or two seasons, and that was it.
It was two seasons. And, I mean, what was good about the contender was, well, I mean, I won't say good, but none of those guys on the contender
were as skillful as a man.
Exactly. They were basically contender. I mean, I'd say journeyman, borderline contenders. All those guys that were on the contender.
B fighters. At the best.
All right. Help me define some of these terms. What's a journeyman fighter?
Well, I won't call journeyman just a guy who shows up for a fight. Your 500 fighter. He's a pro, but he's not. He's a stepping stone. He's a guy guys test themselves on.
Okay.
He's also that guy that if you're not if you come in
out of shape, he's gonna kick your ass.
He's gonna kick your butt.
Okay.
You
know? Kind of like a gatekeeper.
Yeah. If you show up, he's the Emmanuel Augustus. I mean, if you show up and take this guy for granted, he will beat you. He will tear you up. He's a pro. He's a solid pro.
Like Christian Favela.
Christian Favela, dude. There's a
perfect
good
example.
Emmanuel Augustus, man, you want to see that guy, man? 500 fighter, probably best 500 fighter I ever saw. That's journeyman. So all these guys on the contender were above journeyman. I'll say above journeyman, just contenders, B level fighters
at best.
Okay.
All those guys benefited from what? The fact that they were on TV, getting free publicity. You knew every guy, even the guys who didn't win the tournament. All those guys were going to benefit from that publicity. Alfonso Gomez.
Perfect example.
Alfonso, a great story. Oh, he's from Guadalajara. Guy keeps getting fights.
And gets paid.
And he gets paid.
But is that attributed to good marketing on his part? Or
I'll attribute it to Gary Gittleson.
Well,
yeah, he has a really good manager.
Yeah, okay.
He's gotten him a lot of money.
He makes money off that too. I assume the manager does, right?
Of course.
So he's, okay.
But he works for his fighter. I mean, he works to get his fighter. He works to get his fighter that money.
I had a couple of guys that deserved it by far more, but never got that opportunity, you know.
Yeah. Name one.
Jose Armando Santa Cruz.
There you go.
Nestor Rocha.
Nestor, we had him with Top Rank.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, unfortunately for him, he wasn't big enough. You know, he was a bantamweight, and, you know, smaller divisions right now, you know, are not. They're not. No one's seeking them out right now. But
why is that? Aren't they little guys usually quicker, faster, like more action packed?
Yes, but for some reason or another, they're not. People are funny. You know, they'd rather see a big heavyweight that can barely keep his guard up and you know barely knows the basics of boxing. They'd rather see him fight another bum, and both of them kind of stink out the place, but they'll have them on there as opposed to like a smaller guy that's going to go in there and give you a fight, you know.
But dude, just perfect marketing. All you gotta do is make the, you know, the rings and rows smaller so they look really big.
People are funny, man. You know,
it's just funny. We talk about the small fighters.
Yeah,
the guy we just had on show not too long ago, that I know you and I are both big on, Roman Gonzalez. Watch this guy online, man.
Little Latito Gonzalez, he's a bad dude, man.
Yeah. Dude, this, I mean, he's one more win, he cracks my pound for pound list. But I mean, this guy, when you see
like
him.
Like your Michael Carvajal with skills.
Skill and a punch, dude. A heavy hand to go with it. Yeah. Really good, really skilled fighter. But I mean, I know Akihiko Honda from Taiken.
He's been promoted in Japan.
But you know, guys like Roman, they have to do that because really, outside of Japan, and yeah. I mean, how much money can he possibly make fighting back home in Nicaragua?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
But so, I mean, like I said, I like watching the little guys because they seem to be quicker and there's always something going on. I mean, the punches are quick. But in boxing, I guess you're right. People want to see the big dudes.
Big Texas syndrome.
Because they know it's going down. Someone's going down, I guess. Well, I don't know. But in boxing, but
before that, that was the thing, man. The heavyweight division was what used to stir the wherever the heavyweight division went. That's where boxing was going. Now, I mean, try to name me an American heavyweight.
I don't know, Jaime.
And then all the better heavyweights are coming from overseas right now.
Noah?
I like the lightweight fighters.
Seth Mitchell's not a bad fighter.
Seth Mitchell's on his way up. Former college football player, Seth Mitchell.
He's good, huh?
Good guy. Good fighter, good guy. I think that I hope that he does well.
Matchmaker's dream, dude. Seth Mitchell, Chris Areola.
Oh. I want to see that fight. Yeah, I want to see that fight.
He says, ooh, and I say, who?
Chris Areola from Riverside.
Yeah.
Tough, aggressive guy. He challenged for a world title against Vitali Klitschko. Lost, stopped in 10 rounds, but Gabe.
Is that guy tough, man? I mean, he just seems so, like when you see him fight, probably because he's so big. Right? Klitschko?
Klitschko, he's.
The brothers are good.
Yeah.
No, these guys, from what I've seen, they can give a lot of punishment, but they can't absorb a whole lot. They're givers, not takers.
But they've been getting a lot of giving.
Yep.
And barely getting any taken.
Yeah.
So.
What is it? Is it just a reach? They have a skill set? What is it?
Look, when I saw Areola fight, I remember saying this to my wife. I said, you know what? This guy is not going to win tonight. I said, buddy, he has what it takes to win. All he has to do is know how to fight him and how to go about doing it, because when he was able, because he was able to take his punches, and
for 10 rounds, and I mean for people out there who like to say, oh, well, Areola's out of shape, Areola didn't stop moving for 10 rounds, and he was in the guy's face.
He just got pounded on.
I mean, he just got pounded on against a big. I mean, as awkward as Vitali is, he's just effective for his style. I think with the right game plan, Areola could beat Vladimir.
That's what I was saying. That's why I told my wife, I said, he's not going to win tonight. But if he can, he just got to make a couple of adjustments and be in a position to make him fight in every round. I'm almost sure that if he doesn't beat him, he may lose a split decision, but I know that he can beat him. I felt that he could beat him. But you have to have a plan. And if it doesn't work, then you have to go to resort to whatever else. You have to win within your powers. But if something doesn't work, then you change it. You move on. You try. But again, you know, when you go same thing round after round after round, it's not working for you and you're not making changes, then, you know, what's the whole purpose of working out? I mean, you've been all these years in the gym and this is the best you've got. I think that, and that's what bothers me about boxing today. I just don't see that anymore.
Question, have you ever gotten to that point with a fighter where you say, all right, this isn't working, let's get out?
Yes. Like I told you earlier, Gennaro Hernandez fought
Floyd Mayweather
Jr. You know, there comes a time where you just got to say, you know, I think we've had enough. You know, we'll save it for tomorrow. And there's some fighters that you let them fight to the end because they can change a fight with one punch. And so you got to give them that. And, but then there's other fighters like Nestor Rocha, you know, not the biggest puncher in the world, you know, and if he's getting abused or pounded on, there's no need for him to get hurt. You pull him out.
Let me ask you back on that point. Is that what was going on in the corner for the Kirkland Molina fight in Texas?
that fight ended on a disqualification.
No. But I'm saying, oh, stop it, dude. No. But what I'm saying is what you're talking about. All right, this isn't working. Do we keep him in there because we know he could change it with one punch? Do we keep Kirkland there?
Well, Kirkland, he's got to fight until the last bell because he can change a fight with one punch and you know knock a guy out. And so James Kirkland is a guy that if I'm training him or working with him, you know, he's the guy that I will keep there. And I don't care how, you know, I can't sit here and tell you that I'll let him take a beating. I don't know if I would let him take a beating, but close to it, close enough to where, you know, yeah, chances are I'm going to be criticized for letting him take that much punishment. But when you have a guy that can punch as hard as he can, you know, anything is possible.
So, you know, as a trainer, when you get guys that come in and want to fight, can you usually tell right away, like, this guy's got potential, this guy doesn't? Or can you mold someone who you see doesn't have much potential into a good fighter? Is that even possible?
Yeah, sometimes it's like, I'll give you an example, man. When Antonio Margarito came over, I didn't think much of him. I didn't think that he would be the guy that goes on to make the kind of money he made. And I you know, and if you would ask me back then, I would have told you, you know what, save your money and put it. There's more guys out there that are more skillful, and I think that you can do more with them as opposed to this kid, Antonio Margarito, at the time. And look what happened with him.
A lot of it you think would be, let me ask. Let me ask you, will you take discipline over talent?
I'll take discipline.
I mean, we talk about Margarito. Guy's not fast, doesn't punch hard, but the guy works out like a mother.
Yeah, Carlos Hernandez did too.
And he'll throw volume.
And look at these guys, went on to become world champions. And I've always said this, you know, like a lot of guys that put in the work and make the sacrifices are the ones that end up winning. You know, there is so much talent out there that have never made it. You know.
But what do you think that's attributed to, though? If they got so much talent, was it just they didn't execute it right, or they didn't get the right shows, right managers? Well, I mean,
lazy.
I think that's pretty much in a lot of sports where, you know, the guy's gifted, but he just won't make the sacrifices. He won't put in the time or the work. Look, I'll give you another example. Look at Leo Santa Cruz. He just became a world champion. You know,
great performance last Saturday over there.
You know, I haven't seen the fight, and based on what I read, don't even need to see it. And I pretty much had already pictured in my head, you know, pretty much how it went down. You know, he won every round. He threw a lot of punches. He blocked he's blocking, and then he lets his hands go, and it just, you know, he wins every round. And I pretty much already know how that fight played out. And but then you look at Charles Huerta. Charles Huerta came out, they both came out at the same time as amateurs. They fought one tournament here in Carson. They both, you know, went on to lose, and they turned pro after that. Look at where one's at now and look at the other. And if you compare both of their styles in the amateurs, you would see Charles, you know, he has some really good movement. He had, you know, he looked a little bit more like a kid you might want to invest in.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
But look at...
Right now, Charles is in limbo between Golden Boy and Top Rank, and Leo Santa Cruz is
a world champion because he put in the work. He goes to the gym every day, and he trains. May not be the most talented guy, but he puts in the work and he trains really hard and it's paid off. Now he's a world champion. And the other one is like at the verge of, he's more like being a could have been, because at the end of the day, there's only so much time you have to make it.
To capitalize on.
If you can't, and if you ain't done it yet, then, you know, Maybe it's time to look into doing something else.
What is the longevity of a boxer? I mean, what do you, like, if you started with a guy who's, let's say, 20, I mean, that may be pretty old, obviously, because when you hear a lot of boxers, they said, oh, I started boxing when I was 7 or 8 or something. But what's the longevity of a boxer?
It depends. It just depends on the athlete and the kind of, you know, the kind of fighter or person that he is and how he's taking care of himself as he got older. It's not just so much about the amateurs. And the amateurs, you know, it's a lot of work. And they put in a lot of work in the ring, you know, in amateur fights and at the gym and sparring. But nowadays, I go to the gym and I listen and I watch. And not many kids are being developed anymore. Now you have the sparring every other day as opposed to like every day. And there's a big difference with when it comes to sparring and fighting. There's guys in the gym that will say that I'm no good, that I get the fighters beat up too much and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, man, if that's something that you're worried about, you're in the wrong sport, man. You better go do something else with your time. And I tell these guys, I said, you know, boxing is not for everybody. So if you want to, when they come to me and they say, well, can you help me? Yeah, I can try. But at the end of the day, it's like, if you're willing to put 3 hours of your time in the gym, I think you'd be better off doing it in school. Go to school, get a trade. I think you'll benefit more from that as opposed to coming to the gym. See, if it were up to me, there'd be a lot of these gyms would be empty. Because, you know, you look back and you say, well, who's going to make it? Yeah. I sat at the gym the other day, and I'm not going to say what gym. And I go, look around you. Look around you, and I ask, you tell me who's going to be a world champion. And I asked an ex-world champion, Vasquez. I asked him, look around you, man, and you tell me, who do you see being a world champion? He gave me this big old smile, and he could not name one of them. Not one guy there at the gym. And it was a packed house. You know, that's how sad it's gotten over here.
But do you think that's like more people just doing it for recreational purposes?
I think there's a lack of teachers in boxing. There's a lot of physical trainers and a lot of coaches, but there's not that many teaching what the sport, you know, is all about. Now you have a strength and conditioning coach. Now you have a track and field coach. Now you have a nutritionist, which is important, I think. But other than that, man, learn to box first. Get your skills in order, and then everything else can fall into place. If that's the puzzle that you want, then great. But learn to freaking box first.
You can cuss, man. You're okay. We're not censored here.
Well, I don't want to come off too bad like a dumbass.
You
know?
You can cuss. It's all right.
Yeah. Was that Nick all?
Yeah, I was like, who was that? Dude?
Yeah, who was that?
I was like, man.
I thought it was Noah, man.
I said, Hector's got some ventriloquist skills.
I
dude.
Know, dude.
Actually, on this, I have kind of a theory of my own as of why boxing isn't what it used to be. I think, personally, it's because a lot of the other sports started making more money. Because back in the day, boxing was where the real big money was. You didn't get money that much money in baseball or basketball. Definitely still not in hockey, you know. So who wants to sacrifice and live the fighter's lifestyle when they can, you know, practice bouncing a ball or running over people?
Yeah, how many baseball players you got coming from the ghetto? How many baseball players or basketball players you got coming from the ghettos?
That's
our ghettos.
That's the thing about boxing, see?
Our ghettos?
Well, our ghettos, meaning Los Angeles. Oh, okay. Areas, the South
what,
Central.
What you said, the thing about boxing that appeals to guys that don't participate in those sports is boxing's not at the college level. Baseball, you have a draft. Boom, guys coming out of college. Football, draft, guys coming out of college. NCAA basketball, boom. Oh, shit, we want to make it to the big show. Boxing, hell, when you start training young, you don't see boxing at the college level, too. You could take an absolute nobody, dude. A guy who came from nothing, and the guy could become a multimillionaire. Manny.
Boxing gives us so much, man. You have no idea. I mean, I've traveled, you know, to many countries outside of the United States, man. You know, great hotels, so-so hotels, you know. We've got a little bit of everything, man. But, yeah. But when we travel. And we get taken care of. Man, they put us in nice hotels, you know. Like the UFC, man, I've been with them. I went to Australia, Japan. But I've been to Japan, like, many, many times already.
You're Japanese, dude.
Almost. But, you know, it's like, it had I look back and I say, man, what a great life, man. If I die tomorrow, I can honestly...
CVS Caremark maintained its quarterly dividend at 16.25 cents per share. The dividend is payable.
I mean, what am I missing? Grandchildren? I think kids are overrated. That's just me. You know, but that's just me.
You're right. Boxing does give a lot.
Yeah. How do you start becoming a cut man, though? Because there seems to be, well, from what you read, there's almost like a science to being a good cut man. Not necessarily science, but you got to know what you're doing. Unless you're just sitting there ironing someone's face with that little cold iron.
I got a big cold iron.
This guy keeps a big Enswil.
Yeah. You know.
Oh, what's it called? Geez, Hector.
Enswil. They call it an Enswil.
Well, correct me, man, or I'm a rear naked choke you.
You know that back in the early 90s, I saw Nacho Beristain working with one of his fighters, and it was just him and another guy. And it wasn't Juan Manuel Marquez. It was another guy. I think maybe it was Victor Rabanales. And it was just Nacho Beristain and another guy. Two guys in the corner. That's it. That was it. He was the cut man, the instructor. He did everything. And I remember asking John Montes if he could help me out, you know, become a cut man. So in case, you know, one day that he may not be there or, you know, I'm needed, then I can step in. But you know, he had made a promise to the person that had taught him not to ever reveal, you know, his secrets. And I mean, I understood at the time it made sense. But then as time went by, I decided that, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I ended up running into Nacho Beristain in Japan, of all places. And I asked him if there was like a school that you could go to or, you know, to learn to be a cut man. I asked Miguel Diaz first in Japan. And he started laughing. He thought it was like the funniest thing ever. And then he goes and he tells Nacho Beristain. And he's laughing. He's cracking up telling him the story. And so then Nacho turns around, looks at him, and in Spanish, he pretty much told him, look, fucker, instead of laughing at the guy, man, instead, why don't you help him? He's the up and coming, and we're old, you know, so why would you not want to help him? And Miguel Diaz wasn't, you know, he's like, well, he didn't have a comeback.
He was put on the spot.
Yeah, he was put on the spot, and he didn't have a comeback, and Nacho said, don't worry about this fucking Argentinian. Tell him to go fuck himself, man. We don't need him. And then he goes, I'm going to fucking give you some medicine, man. And this is what you're going to need. And that's all you need, man. And then, you know, they pretty much told me that when a cut, you know, this is what you do and how do you go about it. But it's all fine and dandy when they tell you about it, man. But it's not the same when it's time to get in there and do it.
Yeah, because you got like a minute, right?
You got a minute to do it.
No, you got less than a minute.
Well, by the time you get your chair and go in there and sit down and ice the guy.
You start to work on him. You know, if you're lucky, if you get 48 seconds, you know. But it's not so much the 48 seconds. It's about you getting in there and knowing, you know, having the confidence to go in there and do it.
So, but how did you get started? Obviously, because you had to practice on somebody, right? So, like, did you do, like, just at the...
I did one fight, and then I went and told Carlos Hernandez that I could be his cut man, that I could do this. And so he fought some kid from Chihuahua, from Juarez. Ranchero Ramirez, I believe it was.
And, yeah, he's from Juarez.
And he got caught in the, I think it was like the second round. And it was kind of a small cut, man. But that thing kept bleeding, man. And it just wouldn't stop. But it wasn't going into the eye. It was all over his face because that's what made, that was like almost like fight of the night, I think. And it brought so much drama because Carlos was bleeding the whole fight and the doctor went in a few times, Dr. Margaret.
Goodman.
Adam. Keep going. You can fight. And I kept them in the fight. But I wasn't too happy with my performance. You know, I wasn't able to stop the cut. But I kept them in the fight. And I remember walking out of there feeling disappointed that I felt like I let him down. And somebody told me, hey, Rudy, man, stick to training and forget about being a cut man. That's not your gig, you know. Your fighter needed a real cut man out there. And I'm like, maybe so, but fuck him, you know. It starts somewhere, and that's where I went back, and the doctor, Dr. Hicks, was there.
Perlman Hicks?
Yeah. And I told the doc, I said, "Doc, man, you know, what could I have done better?" And he said, "The only way you would have stopped this bleeding, man, is if you would have had things that I have in the operating room, and those are illegal. So you did a great job. You got him through the fight, and so you shouldn't be, you know, don't kick yourself in the butt too much, man. You did a great job, man." He won, and he was bleeding from the second round, so you got nothing to worry about. You did a great job.
Quick info for all our listeners, Dr. Perlman Hicks, he's a doctor here with the California State Athletic Commission, plastic surgeon.
Yep, that's the man.
That's the man. He's real great, guys. Shout out to Dr. Hicks.
And that boosted up my confidence, man, and I just stuck to it. After that, that's when I started working with the UFC. Yeah.
How many fights do you actually felt, you know, super comfortable? Was it like five fights?
First one.
Yeah, first one, you're ready to go?
I was ready to go. I believed that I could do it.
But is that because you've probably seen the stuff in the gym when you're, you know, training people?
No.
No?
No. That rarely happens in the gyms. So you can't really get ready for it.
No. Let me just, a lot of it too, I mean, when you're working as a cut man, I mean, a lot of it has to do with the fighter too, right? I mean, some guys have had old cuts that reopen again. Some guys don't let their cuts heal properly afterwards.
Well, that's always the case. It's always going to happen. But at the end of the day, man, your job is to go in there and keep them in the fight. You know, keep them. You know, and do your best to your abilities, man, to make sure that you keep them in the fight. Because at the end of the day, man, he's depending on you, and you have to do your job, man. If you don't, then you screw it up for him.
Yeah, because
his next payday won't be that big of a chunk. I'll give you a quick example. Mike Alvarado, when he fought Prescott, he got busted up pretty bad.
Dude, I you know what? It's good that you bring that fight up. Guy, everybody on YouTube, all of our listeners, if you want to go up and look at that fight, Mike Alvarado against Bradus Prescott, that was on the Marquez Pacquiao 3 undercard. If you see this horrible cut on Mike Alvarado's lip, when I was watching at home, reading, I was saying to myself, dude, they're going to stop that fight. Because you saw the corner of his mouth. I mean, it was... I had read from Margaret Goodman that whenever you'd get a cut in the mouth, whenever it gets close to that border, it stopped. And when I saw his lip just flying out on the side, I was like, "Oh, that looks bad."
Well, how did he get that though?
Dude, they were fighting in a phone booth. They were fighting in a phone booth, man. And I thought they were going to stop it, but I mean, he persevered. Rudy kept him in the fight. And afterwards, man, he had that piece dangling off right here, man. It was nasty and over the eye.
Yeah, he had two cuts that threatened his undefeated record as well, and his rating. But
I'm hoping that guy gets a title shot soon.
But I heard he had a pretty good cut, man, that night. So
stop it.
Oh wait a minute, that was me.
Yep. shameless self promotion. But no, he did. I mean, the cut on his eye happened in, what was it, sixth round?
No. Like in the, I think the fourth or fifth round.
And it was, what was your reaction when you first saw it? When it came to the corner, you were like, oh shit.
I said, sit down and shut the fuck up.
That's what you told
him? Yeah.
Yeah. He started to say, he started to say something about the eye, and I told him, you know, and my quick response there was, you know, shut the fuck up, man. You're good. You still have another eye regardless. So, you know. And but it's like those are moments that it's a quick reaction. Everything you have to react quick, and you cannot sit there and think about things, man. Your whole thing is reaction, because it's like I've been saying this the last couple of years, is that, you know, sometimes you get your friend to go in there and help you in the corner. But I think it's all bullshit. You know, you have to have people that are experienced there, because at the end of the day, I ask this question, and you can ask anybody, and they'll tell you, well, we get about 45 seconds. And I always say, no, times three. Because there's three guys in the ring. And if they all work together, how many? That's 135 seconds, right? So now he got 135 seconds out of it. But if one of them drops the ball, then the fighter's not getting it. You know, and I think that when you want to learn to do this, then you start at go to the amateur show or go to the gym. Just to go to the gym and be there, you know, time yourself and work at it and try to be the best that you can be. But if not, then, you know, don't learn. Don't try learning, you know, at the day of the fight.
Is it important what you say to right now? I mean, because I thought about it when, you know, Mike came to the corner and you told me, shut the fuck up. Also, I mean, as a cut man, what you tell a fighter, because, I mean, at least I've seen guys, fighters, when they're cut, they're bleeding and that's it, dude. I mean, mentally, they're not there. I'll give you an example. Juan Diaz, Nate Campbell. Juan Diaz, Juan Manuel Marquez, the first time around. Victor Ortiz, Marcos Maidana. They get cut and that's it. They seem to fall apart. Is it important, like, to instill confidence in a guy that the cut's not all that?
Well, of course. But my whole thing is, like, that's supposed to be on you. You know, this shouldn't even be a problem because this is the sport that you pick. And you know that these things are going to happen eventually. And if and when they do, it's like, it's no big deal. Don't worry about it. You can't even fucking see it to begin with. I said, what the hell are you worried about it? Worry about it after, you know. But for the time being, man, when that bell rings, you got 3 minutes to solve that fucking problem in that round. If not, then this sport is not for you. You know, it's like, it's okay to quit. I understand that there's times where, you know, a guy has just had enough already and, you know, it's somebody has to save him. Or if he decides that he just doesn't want to be there anymore, then, you know, it's okay. But don't panic and do it. I think Ortiz learned a big lesson in that fight. I think that he panicked. It was more of him panic. It was more of a panic than him wanting to quit. I think he panicked. And he was young, you know, mentally young. I'm not going to say young in age, but I think he was just mentally young. And you saw how he bounced back. And today I think he's a lot better for it.
What's been the worst cut you've seen? MMA or boxing doesn't matter.
The knee to the face.
Man, if you look at man, I've got some really, really good ones, man. Really huge cut that your mouth will drop, you know, because it's like, are you serious? You know, but and they've been in MMA at the UFC. You know,
MMA. Now, let me ask you this: approaching fights as a cut man in MMA. I'm sure there's different challenges you as a cut man have to deal with. One, I mean, you could treat a cut in between a round, but say there's a potential for during the fight a finger to get in there. Say if it's, I don't know, somewhere on the cheekbone. These are things you got to deal with, right?
Of course. You know, I'm ready. I have to be ready at all times, especially with the UFC because, you know, I mean, in a split second, something can happen, and in boxing as well too, you know. But more in the MMA, you know, you're gonna get, you know, because you get knees, elbows, kicks, you know. Eventually, something's gonna crack, you know, and their cuts are by far, you know, more gruesome, you may say. But I don't find them gruesome, and I think they're fascinating, man. I'm like, wow, man, pretty cool, you know. And I get to go in there and work on them, and keep them in the fight. As bad as the cut may look, we've been able to keep them in the fight. I think there's been like maybe once or twice where a fight had to be stopped because of the cut. But I'll tell you, man, I've had some really, really nice ones, man.
Yeah. And one of our buddies that trains out of Newbury, Chicago, Eddie Winland, just had a fight. He had a nice little cut all the way from a knee.
I'm looking at the picture right now, and it's reminded me. I once posed the same question to Tony Rivera, and I asked him, Tony, which is one of the worst cuts you ever see? And he was telling me Marco Antonio Barrera against Amir Khan. And he was telling me, Hector, he goes, I could stick my pinky in the thing. I was like, are you serious? He goes, yeah, it was that bad.
Yeah, I've had quite a bit. More than I can count in one hand.
Mm.
So,
but the worst you've seen in MMA?
They've been in MMA.
Yeah. Well, is there does every state have different things that you're allowed to bring in as a cutman, or is it all the same everywhere?
It's the same everywhere. Vaseline. 1,000.
What is
adrenaline.
It?
Adrenaline.
That's all I use. I don't use anything else. I like my job.
Yeah.
I like doing what I do.
I know other cutmen use Avitin and thrombin.
Yeah, but adrenaline. I've been told by a few doctors, you know, it's all you need. Like I said, I like my job and I really enjoy what I do, man. So I don't think that I have to resort to anything else that that's going to get me banned. Like I said, man, I like what I do, and the last thing I want to do is not make a living at what I like. So.
But it's nice when you can make a living at what you like.
Yeah, great.
That's just interesting that. I guess I don't know if there's a list of saying, hey, there's these 10 things you guys can bring, and some people prefer to bring those or not. But I guess, you know, people are always cheating the system somehow. So I don't know if you see that a lot or if maybe you've heard about it.
Okay, I've heard about it.
Yeah.
But the way I look at it, man, it's none of my business. It has nothing to do with me. You know, what they do and how they go about doing their things, you know, that's on them. You know, it's, again, man, I go by the book, and I'll argue my points. You know, like, I know that there's certain things I can do with hand wraps and there's other things I can't. And it bothers me because I'm being told by a commissioner, you know, well, you can't do this. Well, don't tell me what I can do. I mean, I can do it. Now, am I supposed to? No, maybe not, right? Because your rules state. Well, just because your rules state don't mean that they're always right. I mean, you give me the hand wraps and how I deal with them and do what I do, then how is that cheating? Why are you going to come and tell me what I can and can't do when you provided me the goss? You know, so how I do it shouldn't be none of your business because it's what you provide me. And I can, and I upset them. They say, well, what you're doing is like, you know, you're creating a cast. And I think that's so full of shit, man, because I'm yet to ever cut the hand wraps off of a fighter and have them feel like they've been
altered
hard. That after the fight they get hard. Come on, man. I guarantee you that you can put gauze tape 10 times over and over again and have a guy fight 6 rounds. And I guarantee you that when he gets out of that ring and you cut that gauze off, there's nothing hard about it.
It's,
if anything, they've gotten softer. Because they've gotten wet, and you know the what happens when the tape gets wet?
It loosens.
It loosens up, and the gauze as well. You know, after all the sweat, they just break down. There's nothing hard about them. So now, do you think, I was using something else, like illegal crap, yeah, you'll see the difference.
But do you think that whole aspect, and then you know, the way boxers fight? Do you think boxing needs something to change the rules about that stuff? I mean, you need some rule changes in the system. You think it's just all old school rules maybe that they used to have?
Yeah, but on the same token, these are rules that were back in the day. And like they talk about, like, you shouldn't put tape on top of the knuckles. Like that helps. Come on, man. It don't even help at all. It won't even make a difference.
When you think about it, as soon as you start sweating,
it gets soft. I'm telling you, man. It doesn't get hard, but no, you got to go an inch behind the knuckles. Okay, and what's the purpose of the hand wraps?
Protect the hands.
And what happens when you can't protect the hands? The guy loses work. Whether he can be making money as a sparring partner, or he can't take a fight because his hands are hurt. And my whole thing is, like, I use what you provide and I keep them in the fight. And it doesn't, I just learned this recently, is that I don't, what I do doesn't enhance his punching power. It may seem like it, but it doesn't. But I can tell you this, that so far, the guys that have wrapped hands, starting with my brother, they haven't broken a hand yet.
there are big differences in your rep, the way you rep for boxing and MMA? Can you touch on those?
Just a little, but not a whole lot.
I mean, obviously it's less gauze, right?
Just a little bit less gauze. Just a little, not a whole lot, but just a little bit. You know, and some guys don't like no, they just don't like a whole lot of gauze either, you know, and or tape, you know. So I've had to, one guy this last show just didn't want to be, he didn't want his hands wrapped. So we just put a couple of, we just put one turn on the wrist and one turn on the on above, right behind the knuckles, and that was it. And he was happy. He was just happy with
just tape.
That was it. Just tape. One,
yeah,
and once, and that was it. Because they said that he had to have tape, and so that was enough for him. He didn't want anything else. And then this other guy said, you know, they want the their hands properly wrapped. And again, you know, it just depends on the individual.
So for MMA, they say, like, they're not required then to have their hand wrapped. I mean, if the guy wants two loops of tape, boom, he's free to do it. Is that, was that in California or another jurisdiction?
And in boxing as well. If a fighter doesn't want to get wrapped, so who's to force him to get his hands wrapped?
Yeah, actually, I was at a...
I never knew that.
Yeah, I was at a fight yesterday. The guy, first time I've ever seen it, you know, I was being a camo inspector trainee, right? So I was looking at... The guy didn't want his hands wrapped, just put his gloves on. And he was like, I don't need padding when I hit his face. You know, so, okay.
Yeah, but the part that they don't understand, and I did this in Santa Ana at the Orange County,
the hangar?
Yeah, I, a kid named Manny, he, you know, I felt like I cheated him out of a good job because I didn't do my job. I, you know, the gloves were so small that if I would have wrapped them the way I normally wrap, his hand wouldn't have been able to fit in that glove. So, at the time, I assumed that because they have enough cushioning on the glove, and then, you know, that would be more than enough for him, and he should be okay with that. Boy, was I wrong, because 45 seconds into that fight, he knocked the guy out. He knocked him out, but at a price. He broke his hand, and both knuckles, the end knuckles, and that's why he broke his hand, because he hit with the side, you know, with this part of the hand, and it just, his knuckles ended up back here. But when he hit him, boy, you know, he cracked him with everything, and he knocked the guy out. He won, but at it cost him.
His knuckles ended up in his wrist.
Yeah, that's how bad it was. And I was like, and I don't think I ever want to do this again. I think that if I'm gonna wrap his hands, then I want to be able to do what I do. If not, then maybe somebody else should wrap his hands.
Mm. What do you do with that though? If you wrap his hands and don't fit into the gloves you give him.
You get bigger gloves.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Because the UFC has them. At the other place, they didn't have extra gloves. But there's some
bigger, you know, just in size. But I mean, the weight's the same.
Bigger in size. As well. I mean, you know, the bigger they get, I mean, it's going to weigh more. But you know, there's a guy that I think every time he fights, and I forget his name, but. He's a big guy, man, and his hands are huge, man. So you know he's not going to be with you can't use the common gloves with him. You know you got to get special gloves for him, made especially for him, because that guy's hands are massive, man. So he has the extra large.
Yeah. Shane Carwin's got some big old hands like that. I mean, like, cans of ham. Just his hand.
I'm trying to remember what heavyweight.
Oh, the old guy, Sonny Liston. He had to have special gloves made for himself, too.
Yeah, for his fights. Because the hands are so huge.
I'm trying to remember what current heavyweight couldn't use the regular 10-ounce grants. He had to get the Grant XL brought in for him. Ah, man. Another heavyweight had big hands. No. Flopped against Lennox Lewis doing two rounds. Grant.
Oh, Grant, right.
Michael Grant.
Yeah, I heard of him. That's right. Don House was telling me about him.
Don House and his role in the UFC, is it as a cut man?
He's a cut man.
See, okay, I was under the impression it was just you, Jacob Duran, and Leon Tabbs. It was one of my favorites.
And Don House.
Don House as well?
It was Leon
Tabbs. Leon was the OG.
Don House, then Stitch, and then I.
Oh, so you're the one that's wet behind the ears.
Yeah.
You should have given me Stitch's number, dude.
No, Leon Tabs and House were the first ones.
Oh.
They were the first ones.
So there's only four of you guys?
There's five of us now. But well, there's okay. a few of us. There's a couple of more of us. You know, it's like Rob Monroe.
Uh-huh.
Good old Ted Lucio. You know Ted?
Mm-hmm.
Nice guy. All the guys are. Like, Rob's a really cool guy, too. Then we have Brad Tate, you know, from Vegas. He's the least known. And then we have Witsy out in San Jose.
Okay.
You know, Arturo Mota.
Oh, I didn't know Arturo Mota was.
Yeah, he was with Strike Force. And since, you know, Strike Force came over.
Good hand rapper.
UFC, so he's a good, you know. We got a good group of guys, you know.
Oh, that's great.
They're all top guys, you know. Real pleasure to work with as well.
Yeah.
Not like some boxing, man.
Oh, come on. Give me a hug.
I would, but.
You guys can save that for dinner.
I have to kiss you.
Just hug him from behind.
He is going to take you out to dinner, I heard, so.
Yeah, dude.
I'm waiting.
All right, man. Well, it looks like we're wrapping up about an hour here, so. You got anything?
It went quick, didn't it?
It did go quick, dude. That's the way it goes here at Skid Row. Noah, dude, do you want to add anything, bro? I've been waiting from you, man, all night today.
No, I'm good. I was just listening. That was a lot of wisdom. So it was good to hear.
You need to come in?
You need to come in? Hey.
I might. Next fight, I'll hit him up.
Definitely.
Cool.
And if any fighters out there need to find Rudy Hernandez, where can we find you, man? Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, man.
Yeah. You're on that Spanish Facebook too, huh? Caralino.
MySpace.
No, you know what? I got on MySpace because that was the best way to get a hold of my kids. I got a 27-year-old, 24, and a 13. And so they were all on MySpace. So, you know, when I traveled and I couldn't get a hold of them, I tried emailing them. So
Madre?
MySpace.
Yeah, right on their wall.
MySpace, I was able to get a hold of a friend of mine who got a hold of them.
That's funny.
And now it's Facebook, so. But I like it.
Yeah, it's all right.
I enjoy it.
What about you, Jaime?
I just want
to...
Better
give a shout-out to your grandma or someone, lady, that keeps posting the stuff in Spanish.
Yeah, those are my tías, dude.
All right, dude. Give a shout-out to your tías.
We love you, mijo.
Qué hermoso.
Okay, shout-out to all my tías over in Arizona, especially to my tío Pancho, one of the kids that came up through his wrestling program. You guys might have heard of him. The kid from Arizona who just won his UFC fight, Cain Velasquez. My uncle was a junior high school wrestling coach.
Right on.
So that was, like, pretty awesome.
All right.
You? Me? No, I don't got anything to say, dude. No. I'm cool.
Any fights or anything coming up?
Dude, probably lining up a show in July, man, out at Fairplex in Pomona.
Get your permits.
Oh, dude, you remember what happened, right?
I heard about it. I was out of town.
Oh,
I would have been. I was in Japan.
Yeah, that's right. You were in Japan during that, man. Oh, man. Yeah, I'll get my permits. Thank you,
guys. All right, you're welcome, dude. We'll make sure we
good looking out, dude.
You got it, dude. Hey, thanks for coming through today, too.
And I'll be in more often, dude. Now,
all right. And thanks to Rudy, man. I mean, like I said, I don't do a lot of boxing stuff. I just think it's really interesting, and all the cutting stuff is kind of cool. And
well, thanks for inviting me. I really had a blast. I mean, time went so quick.
Wow. Okay. Oh, man, we got like...
You know, anytime we talk about boxing or MMA, I mean, we can go on and on and on.
We can go on and on and on.
Yeah.
But luckily, time constraints are what they are. And these are our final, what do we got? 45 seconds.
All right, man. So